Picture this. A recording studio somewhere far, far away.
You bugger.
Say, kids, what time is it?
It's time for...
The Mary White House Experience. Whoa! Thank you. I'm David Baddiel, and this is Punt and Dennis.
Break of the most cynical form of consumer terrorism, the spiking of baby foods. The Mary White House Experience spoke to one of the people most directly involved with this threat.
Do you not feel that, with hindsight, some safeguards could have been introduced to prevent the present crisis?
John Stapleton talking there to Kenneth Clark. But as you know, putting glass into baby food is only the latest in the 80s wave of consumer terrorist attacks. This decade has also seen insulin in Mars bars, mercury in Jaffa oranges, and cement in McDonald's milkshakes. Most recently, the consumer terrorists have been at work in Our Price, callously swapping around record sleeves.
So, the next record on the Friday Rock Show is Suck That, You Hoity-Toity Bitch by the dreaded Axe Overlord and the Metal Mayhem. And these guys really know how to rock.
What's the matter, you?
Another little-known consumer terrorist endeavour was the smuggling of Coco the Clown onto the assembly line at British Leyland. New car buyers found that no sooner had they driven out of the showroom than the roof and doors flew off, and attempts to then put the car in reverse resulted in a sort of neighing noise and a bucket of whitewash on the head. This car was marketed as the Mini Metro. Even worse was to come when the consumer terrorists spiked bottles of Clearasil with lard.
So, you've used it for 5 days. Is there any improvement?
I am not an animal. I am a human being.
Advertising has been made much more difficult in the face of continued consumer terrorism. Kellogg's Fruit and Fibre have had to change their slogan from
apples, hazelnuts, bananas, raisins, coconuts, sultanas
to
apples, hazelnuts, bananas, smegma, gravel, pins and an old rubber Johnny. And sultanas.
Sales went up 20%. It went on and on. Marks and Spencers have had to withdraw a new range of Y-fronts after it was discovered that the flaps had been viciously sewn up, leading to 6 different cases of spontaneous human combustion in public toilets. The shaken vac woman was never the same after the contents of her personal container were switched to cocaine. She still does all her hoovering with her nose. But to return to baby food and the threat still on the supermarket shelf. What sort of person can really be responsible for endangering the lives of defenceless children? The Mary White House Experience has been granted an exclusive interview.
Well, what's a few babies? We're not bothered. We just want to make our money and that's that.
A spokesman there for the baby food industry.
(laughs) 1979, when Mrs. Thatcher swept to power, was a time of confusion and despair. It wasn't so much the winter of discontent as the winter of discotheque. The country was being held to ransom by Nalgo, Newpee, and worst of all, the ELO, who threatened a new album every 6 months if their demands weren't met. As copies of Wild West Hero and Diary of Horace Wimp piled up in the streets, Mrs. Thatcher saw her chance. She pledged to crush the power of those outmoded and unpopular institutions of the past, Genesis, Pink Floyd, Barclay James Harvest, who had caused so much misery through the 70s. Now for further reflection on the Rock and Roll Years Skint video.
Tonight, we present 20 golden greats of the Thatcher era. Yes, it's Sing Along a Mags, Volume 10. All the hits, including the biggest hit of all, the Belgrano.
Just one torpedo did it for me. All my troubles lie buried at sea. Although it was sailing away, you fools. Goodbye, Belgrano. Britannia waived the rules.
Remember those smashing times in Toxteth, Handsworth and St. Paul's.
Roll out the petrol, we're going to Brixton tonight.
The talk of a very special relationship, nearly torn apart by Iran Gate. Here's Ronnie.
Hi, it's an American lie. Send my Ollie with some lolly down to Khomeini. Like Washington, I cannot tell a lie.
they looked toward the truth up my behind. But Thatcher's tongue was all they could find.
Who could forget this classic from the head of the RUC, John Herman and his hermits?
Who do you think you are blaming, Mr. Stalker, when you accuse the RUC? We are the boys who would never shoot to kill. We are the boys who get you sacked from the old bill. So who did you think we were framing, Mr. Stalker? Thank the Lord, there's no inquiry.
Trouble too sadly in that normally happy serial, The Archers.
Oh, Geoffrey, give me your answer, do. Will you pay me? It's only $2,000 to you. You came first among equals, but you can't afford a sequel. When they made you the vice chairman, they didn't mean literally.
While the miners became the enemy within, the overtime earned by PC-85 made him a laughing policeman.
Oh, I am a highway policeman. I roam both far and wide. I look into the backs of cars for pickets in inside. But up and down the country, the miners' path was squelched. They said, what about democracy? And this is what we built.
Yes, it's Sing Along Mags, Volume 10. Available, of course, in 7-inch, 12-inch and Cecil Parkinson sizes. And it's all yours for less than it costs to buy a cemetery from Westminster Council. We leave you with this message from Douglas Hurd to the dockers, the transport workers and protesters everywhere.
It's not a long way to a police state. It's not a long way to go. We got away with bitter all greed, so we should bleeding well know. Goodbye, civil liberties, cause you can't march over there. It's not a long, long way to a police state. In fact, we're already there. Get off me, panda. We're already there.
Now, Police Fire would like you to take a close look at this pair of Y-front-style Y-fronts. You may notice they have a slight tear on the left hip. If you think you can mend them, phone Police Fire right now, and I'd hate to have to throw them away.
It's tough on the inside.
It's all right. It's a bit hot.
What are you in for, then?
Clothes.
What? Nicking them.
Washing them.
What are you doing that for?
Because this is a laundrette.
Sod it. I've been here 7 years.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Picture this.
It came to pass that there was a mighty flood, and all the world was destroyed. For 40 days and 40 nights it rained, until the flood water rose, and all living things on the earth had perished. Only Noah and his family had been saved. And today, on board the Ark, Mrs. Thatcher was there to meet the survivors. This gallant pair of giraffes, this plucky pair of penguins, and she shook paws with this lucky pair of badgers. Sadly, there was only one unicorn. The other one had been kept behind by newspaper photographers.
AD 79. The citizens of Pompeii were going about their everyday business when suddenly Mount Vesuvius erupted, destroying the town totally, burying it in ash and cinders. Mrs. Thatcher was there to talk to the survivors. While Augustus Caesar told reporters, nil nostra bullshittia. Let's not prejudice the inquiry.
1666, Samuel Pepys records in his diary, the great fire that broke out hath laid waste half of London, but Mrs. Thatcher was there to meet the survivors.
1989, Mrs. Thatcher celebrates 10 years in office. This time there are no survivors.
Good evening and welcome to the Agony Aunt Experience. I'm Jo Brand and I'm obviously the right person to give advice because I've never had a successful relationship in my life. I drink too much, I eat all the wrong things, and my idea of exercise is sitting up in bed to have a fag. I've decided to include a couple of problems from men this week because men do have problems as well, you know. Well, they do if I have anything to do with it. And my first problem comes from a 16-year-old boy who wrote into Just 17. Dear Just 17, I'm into heavy metal. Recently, I decided to do something with my hair. Wash it, maybe. But no, after some thought, he says, I had a skinhead. I assume this means he had a skinhead haircut. I'll wait for you. He then says, when I went to school, I was automatically suspended. How can I speed up the growth of my hair? Well, first of all, even an old trout like me knows that if you're into heavy metal, you have to be pretty bloody stupid to have a skinhead haircut. And I must express some surprise that as a heavy metal fan, you haven't been suspended from school already, because there's very little point in educating you, really, isn't there? Also, if you're going to go to heavy metal concerts looking like a skinhead, I'm surprised you haven't been hung by your testicles from the lighting rig at Castle Donington. And the next problem is a young man who wrote into Cosmo. Yum. A Cosmo man, intelligent, sensitive, caring. What a boring old bastard he must be. But I shouldn't be rude about him. He's probably incredibly right on. His car isn't penis-shaped. Unfortunately, neither is his penis. But somehow I just don't think the following letter portrays a sensitive man. Dear Cosmopolitan, romance is dead. I left my wife and kids for another woman about a year ago. At first, our relationship, including sex, was fantastic, but after a few months, all she did all the time was complain. So we split up. I hate women now. Why does the excitement always die so fast? Well, I hate to confess that I do actually know this man, because, of course, I used to go out with him. In fact, he didn't leave his wife and kids. She chucked him out. And after about half an hour of dating him, I could see why. There's something about a man whose main topic of conversation is tubular scaffolding, which tells you that the relationship isn't going to be successful. And the next problem illustrates another sort of man that we all love, written to Woman magazine from a woman. Dear Virginia, I've been married 20 years, and 3 months ago I found out that not only was my husband going to prostitutes, he was managing them as well. At first I was besieged by horror, but now I accept it, and I just want to say to other wives and women, life goes on. Well, thanks very much for the advice, Mrs. Ronald Ferguson. Good job there aren't more women like this around, or I think I'd have a big job on my hands going round punching them all. Thank you very much. Good night. It's a Larry Whitehouse
experience. With me here tonight, I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Herbert Duckett, who has compiled a complete dictionary and phrasebook of the unique language used in tabloid newspapers. Using this invaluable volume, we would like to quote a few examples for you tonight.
Phew! What a scorcher!
What nice weather we had yesterday.
Once again, Marvellous Maggie was globetrotting and showing the other world leaders the marvellous stateswoman she really is.
Thatcher is in deep shit at home.
The horror of this tragedy speaks for itself.
So here's 10,000 words and 12 pages of gory photographs just to help out.
My Battle Against the Bottle by TV's Mr. Sadness.
There is no news.
TV star.
Anyone who's been on TV.
Top TV star.
Anyone who's been on TV more than once.
Love Nest.
Home shared by unmarried couple.
Love Child.
Child born to unmarried couple.
Tug of Love Child.
Child of couple who have split up.
Love Match.
Couple of whom one or both are tennis players.
Love All.
Headline of story involving above.
Love All, Tug of Love, Love Nest, Love Child in Love Match.
Some old bollocks or other we nicked out of a local paper anyway.
An exclusive, in-depth sex survey.
Soft porn disguised as research.
A revealing insight into the attitudes of 80s teenagers.
Soft porn disguised as research.
An exclusive preview of this summer's hottest beachwear.
Soft porn disguised as soft porn.
Princess Diana looked radiant as she stunned waiting admirers at last night's big premiere.
Princess Diana got out of a car wearing some clothes and walked into a building.
Licensed to thrill.
Caption to photo of any girl from James Bond film.
Dressed to thrill.
Caption to photo of any girl not from James Bond film, except in the case of...
Dressed to thrill.
Caption to photo of girl wearing lingerie. If girl is wearing lingerie and has been in James Bond film, tabloid journalist has problem. He may either plump for...
Dressed and licensed to thrill and frill.
Or simply...
I caught that. The stuffy old BBC have again been squandering license payers' money.
The proprietor of this newspaper owns Sky Television.
20 years ago, Great Britain was a place where rosy-cheeked children could play hopscotch on the streets, and where the cheery whistle of the milkman would greet the happy housewife as she listened to the home service and looked out of her kitchen window not yet blighted by planners and architects. The stoat, the badger, and the merry field mouse would gambol playfully in the plentiful fields of this sceptred isle.
The Daily Mail at its most political.
Now is a part of the show where me and the studio audience, we get to kick around a topical issue. As the issue, I thought, what with Kylie Minogue being at number one for the second time, I thought we'd discuss the influence on society of drugs. Should certain drugs be legalised? Has anybody in the audience had any bad experiences with drugs? And do we, as a generation, take more drugs than 7 to 10 year olds? So I'm going to come down amongst you now, and the first question I want to ask, which of us here has never or doesn't smoke or otherwise imbibe any form of drugs? Jesus, this is Woodstock. All right, which of us here isn't attending a methadone clinic? So in that case, you all do drugs. You, sir, what drugs do you do? Well, Mogadon, clearly. What drugs do you do?
Work.
Work. Hey, I know where you're coming from. Funny farm, probably. Do you take drugs?
No.
No, you don't. All right. You do. Hello. I wouldn't have guessed. I'm coming over to your man. Who said that? I could have guessed. Okay, what sort of drugs do you take?
Jif.
Bulk.
I don't care, really.
You don't care, although you should do, because they erode your sense of humour. Why do you do it? What do you get from it? I think you're rolling a joint now. is it absolutely true? He's rolling a joint now. Has anybody here, apart from him, had any bad experiences on drugs? You think it's a police raid, don't you? That's... All right. If you're not going to admit, go to that line of questioning. I'll go to the other line of questioning, which is, why don't people take drugs? Anybody here got anything against drugs? Or any reasons why they don't take drugs? You, sir. What are you? We come from planet Earth. Are you friendly? An argument that's often used in the debate against legalising drugs is that people under the influence of drugs commit horrible crimes, like writing, "Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man." And what would you, sir, say to that sort of argument?
I don't know.
You don't know. Do you take the odd puff?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Often?
No, not very often. No.
Oh, good. I was about to make a citizen's arrest, but why do you do it? Or what sort of situation is it when you do it?
When you go to a party, have a good time on it.
Go to a good time and you have a good party. I didn't ask you to do a Stavros impression, but you did one there. Has anybody here tried anything harder ever? Oh, God, Jack Nicholson. Goddamn Jack Nicholson over there has taken something harder this very afternoon, OK? Shout up into the mic. Actually, what's your name?
Neil.
Neil. Sarge, cop that. OK, over. No, what is the hardest drug that you've taken? It doesn't have to be today.
Tea. I don't go any harder than that.
You don't go any harder than that. No. It's just the sugar you use little bits of cocaine. That's okay. Right, well, this has been an interesting record of the thoughts and feelings about drugs of a random cross-section of acid casualties. My name's Rob Newman. Thank you very much.
This is a 44 Magnum.
Now, as you must know by now, this week has seen the 10th anniversary of the ascension to power of Margaret Thatcher. Tonight, the Mary Whitehouse Experience looks at those we have lost, the casualties of the Thatcher decade. We spoke to social commentator Martin Nevin.
Well, for me, what I think has definitely vanished since the late 70s are those high waisters with Dutch pockets.
And you think this is a direct reflection of Thatcherite policy?
Oh, definitely. I mean, all the people she's chosen for her cabinet are people like Geoffrey Howe and Douglas Hurd, who simply would not look good in high waisters. Whereas she never ever chooses someone like, say, Richard O'Sullivan or Noddy Holder.
Unemployment, as we all know, has been a major problem. Many people's careers went under with the advent of Mrs. Thatcher. One of them was Mike Yarwood.
Well, I've tried to do Margaret Thatcher, and now I think I've got it. The NHS is safe in my hands. Mary. And I also do some of the younger impressions too. When will I be famous? And lastly, to really bring my impressions up to date, here's Norman Tebbit.
Get off your bike and look for work. Betty.
Another public figure who seems to have disappeared is Basil Brush. We spoke to someone who preferred to be known only as Mr. Ron. This is the voice of the Mr. Ron.
Yeah, well, then it was Mr. Roy, of course. Last time I saw Mr. Brush, old Baz, he must have been down on his up as he was at the greyhound racing at White City. He'd got a job replacing the stuffed bunny that goes round on the electric rail.
The advent of a healthier lifestyle and the strictures of Edwina Curry have led to casualties in the British diet. In the 70s, it was quite common to come home to a meal consisting entirely of Bazooka Joe bubblegum, space dust and curly whirlies. But there is hope. Some stars have made the transition from the 70s to the 80s successfully, or at least partly successfully.
Well, Pat, all right, babe. Gonna have to make a decision now, babe, whether you want to marry me. Now that you'll get my mother, babe, okay, babe. Gonna have to make that decision very quickly, babe. 5 seconds run around now.
Right, now it's time for the punchline experience. Before the show, our audience here at the Woolwich Tramshed were asked to come up with a punchline for this joke. What was the last thing Craig of Bross said to Matt and Luke as he left the band? Now, we've collected the punchlines up on little bits of paper, which I have in my hand. I'm going to read some of them now, and the best one will win a prize, a rooftop apartment at Risley Jail. Right, here we go. What was the last thing Craig of Bross said to Matt and Luke as he left the band? I can't go on, not without Harry Corbett anyway. Oh, warm your hand up next time, Harry. That's from Mosha, who's a dyslexic who seems to think that Craig of Bross is spelled S-O-O-T-Y, as far as I can make out. What was the last thing Craig of Bross said to Matt and Luke as he left the band? Sorry, lads, but I've started puberty, so it's time to go, so I'm going to do a single with Jason and Kylie. It's all right, Graham Mortimer. Bit crap, but all right. Well, I suppose the next time you hear of me, I'll be on a Merry White House Experience punchline competition. That's from Kev the Gerbil, who's a... just a bit of a tosser, really. Good, well, what was the last thing Craig of Bross said to Matt and Luke as he left the band? Well, if Michael Jackson can do it, so can I. Yes, that's from Bertie Montague Leon, whose name is just much funnier than his joke, really. Okay, guys, let's put the cat amongst the pigeons. Just push off. I want a silent night because I want to dream, when will I be famous? And all that effort is from Roz Manning, Bentley B and Heather and Paula, all those brains, and it was complete rubbish. Never mind. Someone's just written, I fell asleep. they did, because they haven't written their name or anything. Good, what else have we got? Got to leave, I've got a job as a bouncer in Mothercare, and that's from Bertie Montague Leon again, all right? Drying his hand for a second time. I've got a bit of a mess here. What was the last thing Craig of Bross said to Matt and Luke as he left the band? Where's the pickled egg? Right. From Charles Bart, he's just obviously on drugs, despite the fact that he didn't mention it earlier on. If you want me, look in the yellow pages under shit basis. And that's from Steve Punt. So He's off to Risley Jail. What was the last thing Craig DeBross said? We'll have to split the Brossettes between us. And that's from Anne Anonymous. Oh, very good, yeah. Great. I've gone to join Doctor and the Medics. That's quite clever, that is. She does, because he's always ill. Oh, never mind. Okay. I liked it. What was the last thing Craig DeBross said to Matt and Luke as he left the band? I owe you nothing, but you owe me millions. To the main man. The main man. Now the rubbish man, I should think. Good, now we're back to Harry Corbett. So that's it. So really, Steve won, which is a bit of a shame, but a big round of applause to Steve, ladies and gentlemen.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Picture this.
In the last week, we have seen more outrageous claims by a prominent clergyman about the reality of the New Testament. Tonight, I'll be speaking to the Bishop of Stortford. Bishop,
yes, well, I do honestly believe that Jesus Christ was actually God's son.
Now, you've said some other very strange things for a man in your position.
What position?
Well, as an apparently sane member of society, I understand that you maintain that after Jesus was publicly crucified and had been dead for 3 days, he actually, not symbolically, but actually flew up into the sky and then came back down again on the road to Damascus. I mean, come on.
Well, James Bond did it in Thunderball.
Yes, but he wasn't dead. And he had a turbo rocket attached to his back. And all this stuff about the feeding of the 5,000. I mean, who did the washing up for him? Nanette Newman? And the water into wine. Jesus was a member of the magic circle, was he?
But you see, I do insist that we must take the Bible literally. I mean, when, for example, Jesus tells Peter that he wishes him to be a fisher of men, I think he means that he actually does want Peter to get hold of a very large rod and reel in anyone who happens to be taking a dip in the Dead Sea. Similarly, the phrase, "This bread is my body." I think that that means that Jesus could easily have been mistaken for a loaf of mighty white.
Now, just taking you up on that, you believe that the wafer bread of communion is in fact an actual piece of the Lord's body.
Yes, that's right.
But 8 million Catholics take communion every day.
Yes, well, one has to deduce from this that the historical Jesus was an extremely fat man, and what with his long hair, must have looked a little bit like giant haystacks.
I'm a big daddy man myself.
Duh, easy, easy. Did you know his real name is Shirley? Bit of a rub name, Shirley Big Daddy.
Now, what would you say to the Archbishop of Durham, who says that you are a heretic who seems to want to denigrate the majestic symbolism of the myth of Jesus into a sort of historical anecdote?
I'd say, as I've said to him before, you're going home in a Durham ambulance.
Now, just to put all this in context, Bishop, I should point out that as well as your views on Jesus, you do also believe that the rightful ruler of Saudi Arabia is in fact a jar of anchovy paste in your Aunt Zelda's pantry, that running up and down Kilburn High Road shouting, bargain buckets, marks an important contribution to world peace, and that Morris Minor's Marvellous Motors is funny.
That's right. And that the next Olympics will be held in my trousers.
The Bishop of Stortford, thank you very much. Next week on Face to Faith, I shall be speaking to a representative of the Jehovah's Witnesses and asking him to piss off.
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Joe Brand, Mark Thomas and Skint Video. The producer was Bill Dare.